that this was going to be the last Monday evening that I'll be teaching here in this room. Probably. Who knows? Most likely. The main sentiment that I've been filled with the last days is one of gratitude. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about gratitude. I find myself, I think, through my Buddhist practice, partly as a function of it, often feeling very grateful. And I think it's a byproduct of not only of being mindful, but I would say it's a byproduct of becoming simple. The mindfulness practice itself is a very simple practice at heart. It is very simple practice of noticing what's happening in the present moment. It's a simple practice of being present for your life as it's being lived. And it's helpful to think of it as something that's simple. In being that simple, it leads, if a person follows that path of mindfulness, it leads to a capacity, or leads to a simplicity of being. So it's not just simply a simplicity of awareness, just simplicity in practice, but a simplicity in being. Because the usual, because all the ways in which we unnecessarily complicate our lives are seen as being unnecessary, seen as being a burden, as seeing as being a drain on who we are, and there arises a desire to let go of that, to let it slough off, to outgrow it. And all those complications are, a lot of those complications have to do with the sense of self. So there's a kind of simplicity of self or simplicity of being that is given birth through this practice. There's no longer a need to defend oneself or to, you know, defend one's ego, to build up kind of a represented self that we have to kind of prove ourselves to other people, or not a tendency to be self-critical or be self-inflating. But just as people, you become content just being who you are, just being kind of simplicity of being. And I believe that that simplicity of being lends itself to feeling grateful. When we're not simple, when we're complicated, when we're filled with desires, for example, or filled with lots of activities, there is perhaps no room in the mind to feel gratitude, to feel appreciation for the gifts that come our way, or even to notice the gifts that we have, the gifts that we live that support our life. But as it becomes a simplicity of being and the mind is not so cluttered and so complicated, then I think it becomes more and more obvious that the things that arise in our lives, that appear in our lives, have a kind of almost sacred, miraculous quality. They're kind of like gifts. Where do they come from? Certainly in meditation, some of the more remarkable states that can arise, some of the more meaningful sacred experiences a person can have in meditation, states of great calm or insight, of love, compassion, it's very hard to take credit for those. So, you know, I made this happen, you know, I'm responsible for it. If you're really honest or very present in a simple way for those experiences, they have a kind of gift-like quality. They arise just as a gift. In the Buddhist tradition, in the story of the Buddha's life, the centrality of gratitude as a byproduct of simple presence, simple awakening, is in the story of the Buddha's awakening, where after he was liberated, after his awakening, the myth is that he got up from his seat. First he spent 7 days enjoying the happiness of being free. And then he got up and he walked away from underneath the Bodhi tree where he'd been sitting, and he turned around and faced the tree and spent 7 days gazing at it out of gratitude, because the tree sheltered him during the nights of his enlightenment. So this expression of gratitude for what supported him in the process of awakening. And then at some point, I'm not sure how long after his enlightenment, but maybe a year or two, he traveled back to his home country to visit his parents and his family and people, his relatives, in order to teach them the Dharma, in order to teach them what he had discovered. And it's said in the tradition that he did that out of gratitude for their support for him. That as he was growing up, they took care of him and supported him, and that kind of gave birth to a sense of gratitude where he wanted to somehow repay that kindness that he had received. I find myself that often at the end of sittings, one of the attitudes that seems to get regularly born in me is one of gratitude. And for me, often the putting my hands together to bow that some people like to do at the end of the sitting, for me, it's often I do it as a way to put expression to that sense of gratitude. And I found when I was living in the monasteries that it was really, for me, a very important thing to be able to put my hands together to bow on a regular basis because of all the sense of gratitude I have for just being alive, for just the sense of the gift of presence, of peace, of calm, of love that would arise. And I really wanted to have some way of expressing that. I wanted some way to channel that so it wouldn't be bottled up and held inside. And the most beautiful and simplest way I had for expressing it was putting my hands together like this in gratitude. Some people feel that gratitude is only for people who are happy or joyful. And there's one point of view that says that actually it's the other way around, that it's because we're grateful that we feel joy. And you don't have to have everything going well in your life in order to feel grateful. And in fact, for me, sometimes when things are actually quite difficult in my life, are times when it's sometimes actually much more poignant for me, the sense of preciousness and appreciation I have for the support, for the gifts that make my life possible, make my world possible. There's a beautiful story that Gary Snyder tells in one of his writings. Gary Snyder is a famous American poet, still alive. And when he was a young man, he worked, I think, up in Oregon, perhaps, in the mountains during the summer, on, I think, a fire crew or trail blazing crews. And he was writing a lot of poetry. At the end of the summer, he went for a 10-day, he called it a meditative hike, by himself in the mountains somewhere. And he decided to stop writing poems. And then he was hiking in the mountains. And then at some point, poetry started flowing out of him. And he would jot it down. And what he claims in his writing, that from that time that he was up in the mountains, he never needed to write another poem. He felt no personal need to write anything anymore. It didn't provide him with a sense of identity. It didn't provide him with, you know, just he felt content in himself in some way. He found some inner peace with himself that he did not have a need for poetry. However, poetry happened through him, and when that poetry comes, he said it was a lot better than it had been when he was, and also he felt it was a gift. It was a gift that came. He didn't quite know where it came from. Even it's just they would come. What's the difference between having an ability and having a gift? I think one of the differences is when you have a gift, you don't quite take personal credit for it. It's something that's, you know, where did it come from? Why do you have that particular gift? And in fact, maybe all our abilities are kind of gifts that we can appreciate from that point of view. So we come to the last Monday evening here in Palo Alto, and I feel a lot of gratitude, and my gratitude goes out in many different directions. But the primary one right now is it goes out to the friends who have hosted us here for these many years. And I think it's really a remarkable thing that the friends have hosted us from, you know, people coming from a different religion than their own, opening their doors with tremendous trust and goodwill and generosity. To me, I'm quite inspired there are such people in the world who do such things. I'm inspired by the fact that when the friends built this building, as I understand the story, they had doubts about whether they should build such a fancy building. Because, you know, friends don't like to do things in an ostentatious way. But they decided to build it in the end, provided that it was also available to the community, for the community of people like us to come and use the building. So they didn't just build it for themselves. They built it as a service for the wider community. And we came and asked them if we could use it. They really opened their doors wide open for us to use it. I feel grateful for the friends because in the years that we've been here, in a kind of by osmosis, kind of without any, you know, even without even talking to many of the friends, I feel like I've picked up some of the spiritual sensibilities, or understandings, or values of the friends. For me, I think that this room is not an ostentatious room. I think that there's a kind of simplicity to this room that has made it very easy for many people to come and join our group. I don't know how it is for any of you who felt that way also, but I've had people tell me that coming in here, it was so easy. Almost anywhere else they go where there's a group of people meeting on a weekday evening, you know, there's a little bit intimidating, or you know, something's asked of them and expected of them. And here, somehow this building lends itself to people to kind of come in, and it's kind of friendly, it's kind of simple, or I don't know, any of you feel that? And so somehow the friends created this building, this space, that worked really well for us in the simplicity of practice that we have, that we're hopefully about. I'm very inspired by the volunteer nature of the Quakers here in Palo Alto, that they feel a tremendous sense of responsibility, many of them, I think, to the wider community, and also, I think, to their own community. And so the whole thing here is run on a volunteer basis. And it's one of the things that I aspire for our own organization, that as we move to Redwood City and as we grow, that we can continue being actually a very simple, in some ways, a very simple organization. Simple in the sense that people who come in through the door would not know, or would not be burdened or not be troubled by a sense of obligation or sense of needing to join or belong, or that anything's really asked of them. That they can come here and they can just come here and find a refuge for meditation, for mindfulness, for Buddhist spirituality, in a very open-handed way, without anything asked of them in return. And I'm very inspired by the fact that we've managed to acquire this building in Redwood City in a process that I believe has been very clean. I don't think we've been pushy. I don't think we've been demanding, or I don't think we've asked anyone to do anything they didn't want to do. But people have come forward out of their own generosity, their own inspiration, their own desires to be of service. And somehow, the collection of all the people who have done that, we've managed to kind of manifest this amazing thing in Redwood City. Amazing thing here in Palo Alto for all these years, and now in Redwood City. To me, it's like a shining light that that there is an organization like us, that there's a kind of simplicity built into it, and where generosity and inspiration and non-obligation seems to be, hopefully is really a hallmark of who we are. I'm hoping that as we take root in Redwood City, in our own center, that we become a little bit of a model or an inspiration for other groups around the country. There are many other Vipassana groups like us who are a couple of years behind us, and they've been kind of growing and growing and growing, and now they're beginning to think about, oh, it'd be nice to have a center, just like we did some years ago. And they're all kind of calling me these days. They want to talk to me. How do you do it down there? And I start telling them a little bit of how it functioned, you know, how it worked here. And they're just blown away by how clean this process has been and how relaxed it was. I think it was fairly relaxed, I believe, for the most part. In a little while, when we have some discussion, you can certainly welcome to counter my view on this. And some of them have actually already been inspired by the model of what we've done here. There's one place that I've been talking to where they've already hired a half-time person to kind of help with administrate the organization. And they found out that we don't have anyone on paid salary here. And they said, oh, maybe we have to rethink this. Maybe there's something spiritually significant by a community that takes responsibility for itself, but without any sense of obligation from anyone. So I find myself very grateful to this community of ours. I've been now involved in this Mid-Peninsula Insight Meditation Center community for over 11 years. And I had no idea in 1990 that I would be around this long in this community. I wasn't planning on it, that's for sure. I had no plans of staying. I just came to go to school at Stanford. And I was going to get my degree and leave and go somewhere else. I was going to go up and live near Spirit Rock and I had no plans of being here. But commitment and the maturity and the love and the dedication of all of you, of the people here who came here over these 11 years, was very inspiring to me and became something that I felt a tremendous love to be part of, tremendous inspiration to be part of, and very grateful to be part of it. There's a wonderful reciprocal relationship between anybody who's in kind of a teacher role and people who are receiving the teachings. And that reciprocal role has been very obvious for me in this, for me, because when I started in 1990, I was a teacher in training. So I wasn't even a regular teacher, right? I was just a teacher in training, just beginning the training. And so my growth as a teacher happened together with the growth of this community. So I was very aware that it wasn't so clear, where the cause and effect was. Where the community grew, and therefore I could grow. Or did I grow, and then therefore the community could grow. It went back and forth. And I felt very much that part of who I was becoming as a teacher, how I was being developed and trained, was by the people who sat here in this room and received the teachings and helped shape me as a teacher. I feel that... For me, part of my desire to be part of this community here has been that I have felt it's a very significant place for me personally to be practicing. Some people think of a teacher as someone who just gives teachings and you guys have to practice. I just dispense, whatever, the wisdom, whatever, the foolishness or whatever goes on. And sometimes it is true. Sometimes it's really easy to be a teacher. It's phenomenally easy because all I have to do is... It's kind of like... It's as easy as being a teacher as being the menu writer for a restaurant. You write the menu and people come and read the menu. It's up to you which food you choose to eat. And then you have to eat the food. Or you have to cook it. Maybe it's like a cookbook writer. Oh, I don't know. I don't know if this analogy works very well. But the point being that, I can say various things. But the Dharma, the preciousness of the Dharma, does not reside in the words that are spoken, but resides in the lives of the people who put it into practice. And so any words of wisdom you read off a page or you hear from a teacher are only wise in their having some wise impact in your lives. They're not wise in and of themselves. So what's really hard is the making the practice personal. So in that sense, being a teacher is easy because I tell you what the teachings are and you guys have to do it. I can't do it for you. But there's another perspective, and that is I'm also a practitioner of this practice, Buddhist practice. And so even though I'm in the role of a teacher, I'm very cognizant that I'm practicing with everyone in this community. And there were times where I felt very uncomfortable by the way that our arrangement was set up here in our tradition, where all of you are sitting facing me. And now, and I'm even more uncomfortable once we got this platform from you. Right? And I'm sitting higher than many of you. I didn't, you know, remember I was resistant to that. And because what I wanted to be in the center of our community was not a teacher, but what I want in the center of our community is the Dharma or the practice. And that's something we all share, that I have the same kind of important relationship to the Dharma as my teacher, as for you, the Dharma or the practice is your teacher also. That's the real teacher. So for me, I'm very grateful that this has become a community for me to practice within. And it's one of the reasons why I've stayed, is not just because of the dedication I felt from all of you, but also because I felt it was a very valid and very significant place for me to practice for myself. So I think most of you know that one of the central teachings of Buddhism is the teachings on impermanence. And impermanence has different aspects to it. There's certainly the loss when things go away. But the other half of the equation is that impermanence also allows the possibility of something new to arise. And allows for a tremendous variety of impermanence has built into it a lot of potential. And so, whereas I feel a certain sadness about leaving this place that's been so central for us for all these years, and occasionally some trepidation about what the move to Redwood City means for us as a community, I also am very cognizant that it's the change that this marks now opens up a wide realm of potential. And I feel the potential is just immense, maybe infinite. And I'm really curious to see what we do with that potential. I'm very curious to see what bubbles up, what arises in the space and sense that's created by this change. So far, I feel that I've been very surprised what's happened so far. So I'm looking forward to being surprised again in the new place. And I hope that all of you help us all surprise each other in letting the Dharma, the practice, take the lead, and for the Dharma then to provide us with the wonderful gifts that it gives us. And those gifts are something that where we can continue feeling grateful down through the years. I would like to believe that there's no real spiritual practice in the long term without some sense of gratitude, without some sense of feeling that life, that the sacredness of life, is a gift that we all partake of. And that part of what mindfulness allows us to do is to relax enough, be present enough for life as it's lived, that we can sense that part of life which is a gift, and therefore feel grateful. So those are my thoughts on this closing evening. And now we have a fair amount of time left over before 9 o'clock. It's your turn. What would you like to say? Any questions or comments or your own feelings about this moment? Yes. End of one era and beginning of another.
A teacher that my wife and I sat under for a while said, I thought it was very pertinent to tonight, said, the one unegocentric emotion is gratitude. So I'm effective.
Thank you. If you're too egotistical, you won't feel grateful. There's no space for it.
To say, as part of this community, how valuable it has been for me to have this net of the Sangha and the Dharma that flows into it. But specifically now, I'm feeling grateful to you as the embodiment of a respectable teacher that seems to know the way to guide us. Dispensing the Dharma as appropriate. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I'm quite grateful that 8 years ago I found this group.
Yes.
I'm grateful that that this space was here, non-judgmental and very open for people of many different backgrounds to come and find some wisdom and some peace. And so as a member of St. Mark's Church, we are very grateful for this space and the reciprocal relationship that's been between the two organizations.
Oh, I didn't know you were part of St. Mark's. Or maybe you told me and I forgot, but... Oh, I see. So that's another place I feel grateful because we're leaving St. Mark's too. Thank you.
When we were meditating on the word gratitude, one of the things that I noticed for myself was that sometimes when I'm feeling gratitude, there's also this feeling of either doing it because I want to encourage whatever I'm feeling gratitude for to continue, or to at least sort of have the energy continue along. And so now put that into the context of you know, ending our relationship here and moving to Redwood City, I'm just sort of wondering, okay, so this... You know, what are some of the things we could do to provide space for other groups? Or is there something we could do for the friends to make it easier for them to provide space for groups when we're gone? I don't have any answers to any of that. Mm-hmm. But
it's great concerns. So one of the things I mentioned last week, I was... wanted to do some kind of gesture of thankfulness to the friends for at least years here. I thought some kind of gift or something. And so I asked a couple of the friends if they had any suggestions, what might be an appropriate thing. And one person didn't have anything to say. They didn't think about it. But the other person had two kind of very immediate response. And one was a donation to the urban ministries. And so it was wonderful, unselfish, and it wasn't for themselves, but it's very much in the spirit, I feel, of what the Friends are about, of being a service organization. And the best thing we could do for them was continue in the same spirit. And so that's what we're going to do. And so if we're going to give, from our community, a donation of $1,000 to the urban ministry in the name of the Friends. And the Donna baskets, which are in the back of this room tonight, if you want to participate in that little, you know, making a donation to the urban ministry as a thanks to the friends, you can just put more money in the Donna basket, in the Sangha basket, the rent basket, and we'll just use that towards that gift. The second thing that they said, he said almost, you know, without missing a beat, was he said, oh, just make sure that your place is open for your community over in Redwood City. Do the same. Do the same thing for other people. For a little while I toyed with the idea of naming our center in Redwood City, Mita. And I didn't like really the sound of it so much, but the meaning of it was it means friend in Pali. There's a lot of connotations with the word friend, but one of them, of course, is the friends. And I like the fact that if we had a name like that, it would perpetually tie us in some way to the friends. And I would like to continue, for myself at least, use the friends, spirituality of the friends, as a reference for, you know, the spirituality of our group in some ways. of being grateful to the friends. Yeah.
As someone who comes in and out of the sadhana, I'm very grateful because I know that there was a lot of work done by a lot of people, and I want to thank everybody who has participated in this. I think it's going to be a really wonderful thing for the community, and I'm very grateful for everything that everyone's done.
It's really, I'm kind of in awe of how much people have done. I just, you know, it's been phenomenal. Probably if we knew how much, you know, if we'd known, you know, ahead of time, if I'd known ahead of time what it was going to take, I would have said, we can't do that, it's impossible. And but I was naive. I didn't know, you know, there, and I've really been impressed. It's been a lot of hours by a lot of people, and the best part of it is it seems that it's done with real joy and inspiration. There's these wonderful work parties over there at the new place, and a few times I've gone by when they've been working, it's like this spirit of joy and inspiration has been, you know, inspiring to me. So let's let the homeless come in so they can get out of the cold and get their meal. And I want to express it once again, my tremendous gratitude and thanks to all of you. And I look forward to seeing you in Redwood City. Thank you.